AI might be the most important innovation ever. It's storming every industry, with literally billions being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs the right data and a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? Time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, and application development, with AI embedded across it all. And Oracle Sovereign Cloud helps you address your requirements for location, access, and data residency. OCI provides blazing fast speeds for AI's demanding workloads. And in the cloud, when you pay by the minute, speed matters. And of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. If you want OCI to help you do more and spend less, like Uber, the Premier League, and Oracle Red Bull Racing, take a free test drive at oracle.com/bandwidth. That's oracle.com/bandwidth. oracle.com/bandwidth.
2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back.
Go! Welcome back to the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me, as always, is my co-host, Dylan White. It's been a couple weeks since we've been together. You had Josh pinch hit 1 week, and we missed last week due to circumstances of writing top 30s and other things and kids' baseball game times and everything else. We couldn't get it together. But that being said, we're back this week, and we're ready to send you into the holiday weekend. Digging deep on our top 500 list that we released actually last Wednesday, so we were working on that too. Of course, and all the content that we released around it. We're going to focus today on some risers. We did do a post that's on the website. You can go and read it for yourself. I wrote up 25 rising MLB players, and then Dylan did the same on the prospect side. And he wrote up
I only did 10,
but still several rising prospects and some good names there as well. Some who are no longer prospects, technically, in terms of still in the minor leagues, like one James Wood. I was going to mention because we had, of course, a call up recently with James Wood being promoted to the major leagues. He was our biggest rising prospect. By the time this list drops, I can tell you that James Wood is now the new number one prospect in our top 100 list as well, with Paul Skenes graduating over the weekend. He has leapfrogged Jackson Holliday, and I think for good reason. There's going to be an article out this morning as well by me kind of breaking down the move and why moving James Wood to number one makes sense. That being said, Dylan, he's up now. I have a ton of James Wood on all of my different teams. I don't know if you have shares as well. What are your expectations for Wood here, and what's your excitement level with Wood being promoted to the major leagues?
I have no James Wood anywhere.
He has no Wood.
Exactly. It's bittersweet because I'm very excited, but I know I'm going to have to spend a lot of money on Sunday for him. So I know I'm bound to be disappointed because I don't have that much fab left. I have high hopes. I have high hopes for him. I think it's going to be a nice power speed blend, which is always helpful for any fantasy team halfway through the season, because you can help in all your categories. I expect pretty good batting average as well, and pretty good on base. So in redraft leagues under standard roto, he'll be very good. In your dynasty leagues, I think he'll be a very good addition that you'll plug and play, I hope, for the rest of the season. I hope it's not a blip. Or, you know, a valley like we saw with Jackson Holliday, or even Kyle Manzardo. Like, I think he'll be a regular. Of course, he may have slumps. But, you know, we saw Wyatt Langford. He's kind of turned it around, it looks like, since he came back from injury. So, you know, that's kind of what I'm hoping James Wood does from here on out. So, very excited about James Wood. I mean, he's the number one prospect, like you said, on the BA list. But he's also the number one prospect in RoboScout at AAA. So, you know, all quadrants are kind of triangulating toward him being the best prospect and probably the most likely to succeed at the major league level this year.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the thing that I've been most impressed with Wood in particular this season is the swing strikes, the end zone swing strikes are way down. The whiff is down. The strikeouts are down. You know, he still walks a ton. He still has that patient approach. He still has that power, and he's getting to it. But he's doing it with a lot less swing and miss, which I think when you're talking about a 6'7" guy, That's typically a concern, right? Is how much swing and miss is going to be there. And I'll just put it out there. This season at the same level in the same league, and obviously things aren't always exactly the same. Wood has a lower end zone miss rate than Jackson Holliday has. He's striking out less than Jackson Holliday is. So I don't take that with a grain of salt. You know, this was a guy that I think the biggest concern had just always been, you know, the swing and miss, dating back to last season. You know, you can just look at his 87 game sample in Double A and 33.7% K rate. It's down to 18.2% in Triple A. Granted, he gets a little bit of help there because of the ABS and the challenge system and all that sort of stuff. It's a little bit more generous zone for hitters. But still, that being said, that's a pretty significant drop. And it's something that Wood had talked about this offseason when, you know, I chatted with him prior to the breakout series. So I think that's really interesting to see. He's super tooled up. He can move pretty well. He can play a position in the field. There's tons of power. And he can even steal some bases. So, yeah, I think this guy could, you know, he's not Ellie De La Cruz sort of electric factory, but he's still a really exciting player to watch and tune into every day. So I'm excited about that, Dylan. I'm excited that James Wood got called up. He was also our top rising prospect on Dylan's rising prospect list. Dylan, I want to put you on the spot a little bit here. Somebody we've gotten some really good feedback on, and you know, one of his system mates was just called up to the major leagues, David Festa, who hasn't been bad. But Zebby Matthews, man, he's another guy in this rising prospects list that is really, really interesting. I mean, some of the best command in the minors. And when you hear that, you typically think, oh, he probably sits 91, 92. It's a sinker, you know, curveball, changeup guy or something like that. No, I mean, this guy has, I think, legitimately five pitch shapes when I checked earlier today. The fastball is nasty. It's got good movement. It's got velocity and power. And that's kind of consistent throughout his arsenal. So he's got this really loud, you know, horsepower-driven arsenal. And he lands it in the zone and shows a ton of pitchability. Are we even too low on this guy? Because this seems like that when I look into Zebby Matthews, I watch Zebby Matthews starts and look at the numbers from a given start, I always come back. It's like, this is the kind of starter in a deeper dynasty league. I want that guy. Because even the cost of acquisition right now isn't that crazy. He's in Double A. There's certainly an opportunity for him to get up to the big leagues later this summer, potentially, or at the very least early next year. Twins are typically in the mix. They're not a team that's going to play some service time games like we've seen the Mets do, unfortunately, on Christian Scott. So I'm interested to see how this all works out. I think he could be a guy that's maybe up in the majors later this year. There's not a lot. There's almost nobody with that combination of stuff and command. So do you have any shares of Zebby Matthews? And like, where do you kind of fall on the spectrum of what you sort of project or what the system projects?
So I don't have any Zebby Matthews. He kind of first showed up last year doing well, but he was older for the level. So, you know, I and Rose were both skeptical. And this year, you know, he kind of picked up where he left off. And so I kind of was, you know, blinded by the preconceived notion I had that, you know, he's just an older pitcher who's beating up on lower levels. So he was unranked, and then he's now ranked in the top 400. He's like 350. The reason he's not maybe as high as the stuff is suggesting is the strikeouts aren't that high. It's kind of like you'd expect it when you throw like mid 90s like he does. It would be a bit higher, but you know, it's kind of not much. It's kind of like 22% kind of strikeout rate is what it's projecting. Of course, the low walk rate is incredible. Very good. So he kind of looks like, I was on James Anderson's podcast a couple weeks ago, and I kind of threw out a Nathan Eovaldi comp, and that like Eovaldi throws 100, doesn't walk that many, doesn't strike out that many as much as you'd expect, but he puts up good solid numbers, but he's not really like an ace. And so I kind of get this sense that like Zebby Matthews will kind of have that kind of similar production. Like Kyle Hendricks, who like have really good ratios, but not really blow anyone away with the strikeout rate, not have the greatest projection if you use like SGPs.
What don't they like on the strikeout rate? Because I mean, he's got a 30.6% K rate in AA, and he had a 33.3% K rate in high A. It's up from last season, but
he's 24 this year. He's 24, so like the jump from age 24 to age 27 is, you know, like Noah Schultz is 20.
I got to be honest. I don't know if that matters with pitchers. I don't think I even care, because so many of these guys aren't good until they're 25, 26. You know, like what we're kind of seeing right now is there's a renaissance of like being good at 19 is sometimes bad. Mm-hmm. You know, they throw too many innings. They blow out, like. They kind of don't go through that litmus test that is college baseball, which I think is honestly more valuable for pitchers than it is for hitters. And, you know, the numbers and production has kind of borne that out. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think this guy is very legit. I don't think Eovaldi is a bad comp either. I think I'd be totally fine with that. I think if you're talking like cost of acquisition to what the return on investment is, I think this is like a better investment than going after your Schultzes or your Jackson Jobes. As exciting as those guys are, I don't have any Zebby. I have some Jackson Jobe. I've tried to get Zebby recently and was not able to do so, but I was a little balling. So I don't know, dude. Like, I feel like these are the guys that hit. Like, this is Christian Scott, right? Like, Scott was old and old for the level. But once you get up to AAA, I don't even know if it matters. If you're 24, 25, I don't know if I care. You know? I mean, because how many guys come to the majors at 23 and then are just good? It's not many. You know, yeah, you got Paul Skeenses, you got your Pirates prospects for sure, but I don't know. You know, and that's not challenging the system as much as it's more like, I don't know. I think I worry about age a little bit less with pitchers. Because when guys figure it out, they kind of figure it out. You know, like Charlie Morton was 31 when he figured it out. Rich Hill was how old when he figured it out. Took Tyler Glasnow a really long time to figure it out. Christopher Sanchez was a guy that we kind of didn't even rank as a prospect. Hauk, Garrett Crochet, Cole Reagans, Ranger Suarez, Logan Webb, Seth Lugo. These are your top 10 pitchers in pitcher war right now. And I know that's not one for one with fantasy value, but you know, there's a lot of pitching out there that I think maybe is better served as starters in the major leagues than a lot of these guys that we rank pretty highly that have relief risk and just really loud stuff. And I know this is like against what I typically believe. I'm such a stuff first kind of guy. But yeah, I don't know, Dylan. I just something to stew on there. I kind of wonder. I don't care about it. Like, it's just like the same thing with Quinn Matthews. Like, yeah, he spent 4 years at Stanford, but then came into pro ball and he's on a much more normal rest schedule and pitch count. You know, he's not out there throwing 120 every time he goes out there because Stanford's bullpen pukes in their shoes consistently. And then all of a sudden, the guy's sitting 94, 95 with great pitch shapes. And, you know, now he's in double A. Like, I don't know. I feel like sometimes, like, the pitchability, that part of it, like, being able to actually execute a lineup. And it was something that actually came up in a call. I know we're on a tangent here, but I came up on a call with the Rockies recently, which I know people are going to laugh about. But they're doing okay with some of the pitching development this year, actually. There's been some guys in that organization that are really performing pretty well. We don't know how it's going to go when they get the Coors, but they have some prospects. They have some pitching prospects. They had brought up Dolander, and one of the things they said was, like, we love the stuff. It's totally back. The fastball's back. The slider's great. We love the strikeouts, but at the same time, you look down and, like, he's constantly at, like, 90 pitches in the fifth inning, you know, 100 pitches around there. And it's like, there has to be some efficiency, right? Like, you want to get outs ultimately. So if you trade some strikeouts for some ground balls, etc., I think you do that, right? Ultimately allows you to throw more innings, which is what the goal is. And you keep runs off the board. It's one of those things, like, when we, who is it on the guy that breaks down all the draft prospects that hated Dylan Cruz, Fabio, right? Matt Collier.
Matt.
You know, his system and a lot of the ways that he presents it, I think, is super confusing. But one of the things that he does that I actually really value is he looks at, you know, like fly ball avoidance and like, you know, some of those, like some of those almost like indirect ways of looking like hard hit avoidance and some things like that. And I do think like what, now that we're learning more and more about batted balls, we're learning, and I don't know if you dropped, saw the information I dropped in the chat yesterday that Pajak had whipped up, but off of a Mike Petriello tweet, but we're learning that a lot of these pitches, sinkers, things like that, location-based, generates a lot less hard hits and a lot less distance on hard hit balls at certain launch angles, because it creates different types of spin on the ball. Right. It's the same thing that we see with ball flight from a pitcher. Right. We're like, the thing is the pitcher is starting from, you know, I'm trying to look for the proper term here, but I'm not going to find it. But he's starting from like a stop position. Like he's not reacting. He's creating the action. Right. Like you react to what the pitcher does. It's the only sport in the world where the every play starts with the defense having the ball. That's what's so crazy about baseball, right? So like the ball flight there, he can control that. But the hitter and the ball flight, he can only control it to a point because there's still the pitch that he's hitting and he's got to be able to do something with that. And the physics of that pitch meeting that bat, regardless of how hard he hits it, at how good of an angle, may not go as high as if he catches a high fastball or a hanging slider or some of those things. So, you know, I think some of that stuff with pitching is still the stuff that we haven't fully figured out of like really being able to pinpoint and measure hard contact avoidance, or I'll even say like home run avoidance and some of those things. Like, I think we've broached it, but we've never really gone full in and like fully understood it. And I think that's kind of the next evolution of this. And that being said, that's one of the reasons that I like some of these guys like Quinn Matthews and Zebby Matthews that are showing this great pitchability in the minors and the ability to get outs with pretty decent stuff too and a lot of strikes. You know, for years I felt like all the prospects I liked just didn't throw strikes. So anyway, Dylan, I'm sorry.
No, I think there's a lot there. Tangent. I think it's true. I think most of the stuff models were kind of like whiff based. Mm-hmm. But you know, if you throw a four seamer up at the zone and you get whiffs, you also give up a lot of home runs, and that's kind of what the data you're saying, and talking about is. And same with like sweepers are great for getting whiffs against righties, like a righty on righty, but
same handedness, yeah. But you don't see many lefty sleepers, so it's true. Righty on righty makes sense.
So it's but they're not very good at all. They get crushed against you know, opposite handed batters, and so I think, you know, some stuff models are trying to come out that are kind of like run value based. Which is more of like where the, like what traditionally is reducing, like preventing runs based on where they're thrown and like with the metrics of the pitch. But again, those are also, it's kind of, you throw a certain pitch, a 2-2 or 1-1 because, you know, you're trying to steal a strike, et cetera, et cetera. So it's kind of like the snake eating its own tail. And so it's kind of hard to parse that. And another thing is that like, limiting hard contact as a pitcher is not generally that predictive. People give up a lot of hard hits. It's not that sticky like year on year.
Yeah.
So that's kind of why like the stuff models were kind of eschewing like, oh, this guy, you know, does not give up high exit velocity, so he must be good, but that's not very
predictive. Not even the high exit velocities. I think it's actually the guys that they're bought like the damage or the contact at good EVs and those high exit velocities, those barrel sort of buckets, that those balls don't travel as far. You know, I think that's what it is. It's not necessarily not because it's an old adage, right? And you hear it like in little league all the way up to the big leagues, but it's like, oh, you know, guys that throw hard, the pitchers provide them the power, you know? And there's probably some truth to that, right? Like, Robbie Ray, I remember, always gave up a ton of hard contact, but he was also able to kind of work around it, you know? So I think it kind of depends. And I think there's certain things about how the ball spins and the spin axis on that ball when it's made at contact that, you know, create more drag, right, that allow that knot to fly as far as other, you know, contact might. We haven't pinpointed it yet, though, but I think it is something that's maybe coming. And I don't know, like I'm finding a middle ground with stuff and command. And I think this is kind of what it is some of these guys, you know?
It's funny. I mean, this whole conversation is kind of exactly the debate we're having, putting together the dynasty list. Like Matt Wilkinson is just like crushing it in terms of like surface stats. Mm-hmm. He's got incredible like strikeouts, walks, etc. He's not that old. It was against a lower level competition, etc. But you know, he's like just dominating. But his stuff, he's, you know, he's just barely 90 miles an hour. And so like what do we think? How is he going to project out? Is it going to be stuff based or is it going to be results based? Yumin Lin, another great example, who's always like putting up good numbers and very young, but like he doesn't throw that hard. And so what do we do with that? So I think, I think it's ever changing. I think you pick the guys you like. If I have a lot of guys who are high strikeout guys, but also high walks, like, you know, Andrew Abbott or Dale Hall or that type of thing, I may want to take a Quinn Matthews as sort of like set up that floor for me, a high floor, maybe not as high a ceiling. I know you're arguing maybe you will have a high ceiling, but I think it's, you know, kind of like roster construction. What kind of things do you want? Do you want the like person just airs it out Robbie Ray style, but he may break? He may also have all these blow-ups, or do you want, you know, like consistent, solid, like Nathan Eovaldi, like we were saying, kind of production. So I think these are all great questions and all great things to query. And, you know, we're going to do our best to get some answers, some substantive answers.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. It's one of those things we'll continue to dig in on and do more research as information becomes available and talk to people and try to figure all that out. But I think some of my targets are changing in fantasy, and maybe that means that like I get more number twos and number threes. But I just feel like so much with pitching happens overnight. I mean, you look at this top five right now and WAR, Crochet, Hawk, Reagans, Sanchez, Sale. Where were we at on guys like this a year ago? You know, Sale, I think we all thought was like, could maybe get another good season out of him, but we didn't think, I don't think we thought he would have this type of season where he's, you know, potentially in the conversation for Cy Young in the National League. You know, certainly can I kind of echo those sentiments of Christopher Sanchez. I think we all thought he was a good pitcher and one that was improving. Another guy doesn't strike out a ton, but he gets 60% ground ball rate. He gets a ton of outs. Maybe not as valuable in fantasy, but still pretty valuable. Ratios are hard. You know, Reagans obviously kind of pop, but was a reliever that got traded to the Royals, and it seemed like, I don't know, he put on a new shirt and became a completely different player. Hauk, a guy that was in and out of the bullpen. Crochet, a guy that was in and out of the bullpen. I just think so much evolves with pitchers, where I feel much more confident in like, this hitter is this. He'll be this within 2 or 3 years. Where with pitchers, man, I'm like, I don't know. I really don't. Like, what's going to happen when he gets to the big leagues? I think that, especially with the auto zones and the challenge system, I think that the stepping stone from AAA to the majors is not quite as high, significantly less high than it is for hitters. I think there is a big jump for hitters because they're dealing in an environment that is ultimately really good for them, right? And then you go on the other side and it's like, you know, we sort of get into a situation where, you know, pitchers have dealt with maybe a more stressful situation because of some of the calls that they wouldn't get, that they would be getting in the major leagues, the challenge system, all that sort of thing. And then they come up to the majors, they don't have to deal with any of that. They got, you know, great accommodations and food and training and coaching and all that sort of stuff. And it's, you know, much easier, I'm sure, to kind of refresh, revitalize the body between start to start and then not have to deal with the zones and all that sort of stuff as well. So, I don't know. Some of those like guys are becoming more interesting to me, Dylan. I'm thinking of building my pitching staffs differently. And I think it kind of goes back to something that we said, and this is going to segue nicely after our break. Something that we said a few weeks ago about maybe using some more minor spots in your deeper leagues that do have maybe 15, 20, 30 minor spots or more to build up that pitching depth, because there are so many injuries at the major league level. You need that next man up, that guy that, you know, could potentially get called up to replace so-and-so, or, you know, that good pitching prospect, or some of these guys that show some traits really early, being on those guys early if you have enough space to roster them. Because I'll tell you right now, like, I wish I took a shot on Quinn Matthews. I wish I took a shot on Zebby Matthews versus Joe Boyle and some of these other guys that I took this year in my 30-team league. Dylan, that being said, we're going to talk about some pitchers that rose on the MLB list when we come back from this break. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. What I love about Indeed is how easy it makes it. I post a job. I get the responses. I can search for them, sort them, analyze them all in Indeed. Then I can contact, set up interviews, do it all within Indeed. It makes it easy. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Whether you're playing or coaching a doubleheader or you're a fan in the stands, I don't need to tell you that we're sweating through yet another hot summer. And whether you're playing or watching, hydration is key. Liquid IV is extraordinary hydration for physical endurance, mental clarity, and overall well-being. A single stick of Liquid IV delivers better hydration than water alone, with 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients. I love to hop on my bike and ride at the end of a workday. Before I do, I tear open a stick of Liquid IV, add it to my water bottle, and stir it up. It's that easy. 15 seconds, and you've unlocked better hydration. I'm currently partial to the sugar-free white peach, but there's a flavor for you, whether it's strawberry lemonade, raspberry melon, lemon lime, and it's easy. The sticks fit in your pocket. You can add flavor, electrolytes, vitamins, and nutrients wherever you go. Turn your ordinary water into extraordinary hydration with Liquid IV. Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use code BA2022, that's BA2022, at checkout. That's 20% off of your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code BA2022 at liquidiv.com.
It seems like everyone is either starting a side hustle or becoming their own boss. And you know what they're hearing a lot? It's the sound of another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Sign up for a £1 per month trial period at shopify.co.uk/sell23, all lowercase. Whether you're selling loafers or peace lilies, Shopify simplifies selling online and in person. Covering all sales channels, from a shop front POS system to its all-in-one e-commerce platform, Shopify even gets you selling across social media marketplaces. With their 24/7 help and extensive business course library, Shopify is ready to support your success every step of the way. Go to shopify.co.uk/sell23 to take your business to the next level today. That's shopify.co.uk/sell23.
All right, we are back. We had our spirited prospect debate, talking some pitching prospects and the type of pitching prospects that we like, the buckets that we like. And Jeff's becoming an old man. He likes strikes. Just throw strikes, kid. But something that I noticed when I was going through our risers for MLB, and there were a lot of them. I mean, there were some rising prospects. I don't feel like we went as maybe aggressive. I think there were a lot of movement within the major league ranks and some guys with injuries, some guys who came back from injuries who have performed, some others that haven't, some prospects who got called up and then graduated, like Paul Skeens. But when I go through and I look, we won't say all of them, but I go through 1, 2, 3, 4, the four like top movers. So these are guys that moved, we'll say, within the top 150 or moved into the top 100. The top four movers are all pitchers, Dylan, with number one being Paul Skeens. And I don't think I'm, you know, giving away the milk here, but Jared Jones right behind him, another big mover. Skeens moved 71 spots to number 23 overall. I believe he's our third highest ranked pitcher, if I'm not mistaken, Dylan. You can correct me if I'm wrong. And then Jared Jones moved to 58. He made a significant jump as well. And there's a handful of others that we've talked about. So I guess this is kind of to say, how much of this do you think is a product of the MLB run environment that we're currently in, where runs and scoring are much more at a premium? Maybe not as much as it's been at certain points, you know, when we kind of had that weird dead ball era, you know, at the beginning of the 2010s. Maybe not that extreme, but compared to what we've seen in recent years, it definitely feels like the offensive output is down. And it's funny because there were rules and rule changes that were made with the intent of creating more offense and more balls in play, but maybe ultimately it's kind of helped the pitchers more than we had anticipated. So how much do you think, you know, because there are a lot of pitchers that have moved up a lot. Like, how much of that do you think is the MLB environment?
I don't know if it's so much the run environment for me personally, if ranking, because I'm always kind of doing it relative. So I'll look at how the person's performing or expected to perform compared to the rest of the league. So it's kind of like the rising tide floats all boats. I think for me, it's so back in April, you know, you see Garrett Crochet doing well. You see Jared Jones doing well. And it's like, okay, he's done really well for a month. Like, is that real? We've seen a lot of people come out and go do well for a month, but now in June, 3 months, half a season, it's kind of way more real. Obviously the sample size is larger. So it's, I think it's kind of cementing their status and they're like their quote unquote true talent far more, like with far more confidence. I think a lot of it is also just attrition, like just like Spencer Strider went down, Yamamoto's injured, DeGrom hasn't pitched, all these people, like there's so many pitchers are out. And some of the ones we expected to do well, like Pablo Lopez or Kevin Gausman or Framber Valdez, like some of these guys are definitely not meeting their potential or their expectations. And these other guys are just coming up. You mentioned all these guys, Crochet, Reagans, Ranger Suarez. And so I think I see a lot of panic in my dynasty leagues of people who expected to have a good pitching staff and, you know, they Garrett Cole's out and Lucas Giolito's out for the year and all this. And so they're panicking to just try to find anybody. And these guys, these Crochets, these Reagans, these guys are young. Skeens, Jones, Jared Jones. They're extremely highly valued assets that everyone is trying to get because pitching seems to be a very at a premium. And then these guys are dominating and they're young. And so you just dream on the, like, you know, the a decade's worth of performance. So I don't know if it's run environment, because for me personally, it's like rising tide lifts all boats. If no one's hitting home runs, like that's kind of helping all pitchers kind of idea.
But don't you think it could potentially impact certain pitchers in a more positive direction than maybe others based on some of those traits and,
yeah,
you know, some of those batted ball traits and some of those things that, you know, granted stuff is important, but guys all do have that. There is an identity of, you know, sort of the type of contact that's given up and where it goes and all that sort of thing. With some of the shifting rules even and some of the other stuff, I wonder how much it's changed. I also think the pitch clock, and we said this coming into the pitch clock era, that it was going to impact hitters more because it's just like pitchers dictate the pace already. And it's just one more thing that they have in their advantage to dictate the pace, you know? I mean, most of the time when I see like auto balls or auto strikes, it's against hitters. It's auto strikes against hitters, not pitchers.
Fair enough. I don't know I'm not totally up to date on all the data about the pitch clock. You know, like some, there was speculation that maybe that's contributing to the injuries. Al Kamanoa, you know, anecdotally saying it's like he wasn't ready for the pitch clock. Like he didn't get a chance to recover that. And that kind of, threw him off last year. I don't know if that's the best attribution for why he wasn't doing well. But I don't know the data. I haven't looked at the data fully to like have confidence that, you know, who it's affecting more or what type of players it's affecting more, unfortunately, but it's definitely a reasonable theory.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, you know, I find it interesting because there's been kind of the opposite, like in terms of the landings for hitters have been pretty rough and the landings for pitchers have been much better. And we've seen a lot of these guys be really productive, you know, young pitchers putting up good numbers, guys that have been in the major leagues. And I think there's just, it could just be a coincidence of timing when certain guys broke out, whether it's Crochet, whether it's Hauk, some of these other guys. But there's a lot of interesting pitchers in this list. I felt like I was more interested in the pitchers, you know, all these guys are potentially rostering some of these guys versus a lot of the hitters where, you know, there were some good names that moved up. One that we moved up, and I thought we were super high in this guy, Dylan, going into the season, is Ezekiel Tovar. And he's been really productive, and he moved up as well. You're a Tovar guy. So what was your thinking on moving up Tovar?
I think coming into the year, it was kind of, you're relying on the fact he's young and there's going to be development and a step forward, and any struggles he had last year are, you know, he's going to work through those, but you're kind of hoping as opposed to like confident. And then he kind of came out of the gate pretty strong this year. He's got good numbers. He's got good WAR numbers. He's playing great defense. He's hitting at the top of that Rockies lineup. It's just sort of like, I have way more confidence that he's going to be the guy we thought he'd be than last year, coming into this year, where it was kind of, you have to like rely on, you know, the aging curves and the expected hitter curves as they age. But he wasn't really showing it yet. And so you had to take it with faith. Now I feel that it's like there's far more confidence that he is going to become that, you know, 20 home run, 15 stolen base, good batting average, especially because he plays in Coors, guy hitting at the top of the lineup, playing good defense, so he's going to always have playing time. Like, that's the type of dynasty asset I like. And it's just, I have far more confidence that he's going to, you know, maintain that and reach that potential.
Yeah. No, I like that. Yeah, I mean, the approach is still a little bit scary, but I think this is kind of who he's always been. Like he hits the ball decently hard. I think there's way more projection still coming, you know, at 22 years old, and he hasn't run as much as I think he probably could, but you know, he makes contact, guy that's going to run higher batting average on balls in play just generally, anyway. And I think, you know, at 22, there's still a lot of prospects that are this age that won't debut for a couple of years who have good big league careers. You know, he's kind of making that up. He's learning on the job. And I think has been, you know, for 2 years now, been a pretty good player for them. So it will be interesting to see where it goes over the second half of the season. In a lot of ways, he's kind of very similar to like what Tim Anderson was in his peak seasons, though. Tim Anderson wasn't 22, you know, where the steals aren't crazy. There's enough power, enough steals, and enough batting average and sort of counting stats to carry the profile. But I think with Tovar, you hope that there will be more power than you saw from Anderson, maybe some more steals, and that the approach, you know, eventually rounds into form a little bit more and the strikeouts come down. A lot of that is because he loves to swing. I mean, just he swings out of the zone. I think he has like a top five O swing in all the baseball, at least among qualified hitters. Can double check on that when you kick it back. But yeah, I thought that was an interesting one and somebody that we obviously were pretty high on. I want to also give us a pat in the back on Jordan Westberg. We had Jordan Westberg inside the top 150. And I think a lot of people probably were a little skeptical of that. You know, I felt like Westberg was a guy that you could go out and get. And there were a lot of trades I saw for Westberg that looked really bad in the offseason that I look back at them now and I'm like, That was a better trade than I thought it was. We had him pretty high. We like the tools. We like the skills. But he's another guy that's moving up. You know, was 140 in our April rank, now 94. It was one of the smaller ones, but I felt like if you move 50 spots inside the top 150, that was a lot more than a guy moving from 500 to 250. Even if it's a 250 spot jump, that's a pretty significant jump. You're kind of reaching into the top 100 players in Dynasty Baseball. There's certainly a lot of value with that. Talk to me about your thoughts on Westberg. I've always liked Westberg. I love the swing. I love the athleticism. I think he does a lot of really good stuff on a baseball field. So glad to see the success he's had. But what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's kind of the same story. It's coming into the season. We're not sure if he's going to get the playing time. You know, there's Jackson Holliday, there's Connor Norby, all this stuff. Kobe Mayo, who's gonna kind of emerge from that crop. Also, he wasn't that great last year too. So it was, again, you're kind of taking on faith that the projections are what the projections are. But this year he has, you know, kind of emerged. Holliday, we all know his struggles. Norby seems down, further down on the depth chart. I mean, Kobe Mayo is knocking on the door. Clearly he's on one heck of a heater right now, but Westberg emerged with the playing time and he's producing. So again, there's like far more confidence that he's going to be, you know, that 20 to 25 home run guy with a bunch of good stolen bases,
yeah.
Good batting average, good on base, good defense. So like prototypical player you want. It was just maybe unfortunate he's on the Orioles, which was kind of clouding and murkying the playing time.
Sure.
Just because they have so many guys waiting in the wings. And now it just kind of seems like he's kind of cementing, at least that's my perception, he's kind of cementing his status as he's, you know, he's going to be a regular in the Orioles. And then as they get the Kobe Mayos and all these guys in their lineup hitting their potential, it's just going to be like an incredibly productive and potent lineup. And to be able to have Jordan Westberg before all that happens, I think is, you know, now's the time to get in on that.
Yeah, I like Westberg a lot. And, yeah, you know, to give us some props there. Hey, another guy that I got to take a mulligan on. I was way out on Jaron Duran. I thought this was never going to really click. He was good in spurts last season. You know, ended up with some more injuries at that, you know, last year. I believe they were kind of platooning him and not really hitting him against lefties every day. He's been unbelievable. At this point, I mean, was he a top 10 player on the Razzball player radar at this moment? Duran's a guy that moved up a ton. You know, it is a little bit older of a breakout. If you think about, you know, the career arc and, you know, all that sort of stuff. I mean, he is 27 years old. He's going to be 28. So he's in his peak years, but you know, even if you got 3 years like this out of Jaron Duran, I mean, it's pretty significant, you know, you know, just looking, you know, at the numbers and what he's been able to do. Speed, there's some power there. Obviously, you know, he's the table setter in this lineup, which is, you know, a huge benefit. So sort of what are your thoughts on Jaron Duran? Because like I said, I was way out this year. I thought that was going to be the best we've seen of Jaron Duran last year. And I'm eating some crow, some delicious crow on that one, Dylan.
I have Jaron Duran in a daily league. My home league is a daily league. And every time a lefty's going, I bench him and I always see him hitting leadoff, getting on base, hitting a home run. Like I'm tired of seeing these bench home runs or these bench stolen bases. So I now just plug him in no matter what arm the pitcher's throwing from. He's hitting at the leadoff against lefties and righties. He has a 293 batting average, like a 360 on base. He's got, I think, 7 or 8 home runs, 20 stolen bases. Like he's on pace to be like a 15-40 guy with a batting average and on base. So obviously that's great. And that's without Cassis in the lineup to hit home runs and knock him in. That's without Trevor Story. Like this is kind of a depleted, in quotes, Boston Red Sox lineup. He's sitting at the top of it and he's just excelling. And so I did not expect him to do this. I expected him to be kind of like a platoon, strong side platoon guy, maybe hitting ninth against lefties, not doing well against lefties. And so there's talk about whether or not, you know, he can be a regular, et cetera, et cetera. But he's definitely putting the, you know, the critics, he's quieting the critics by just doing so well all year. So it's, again, the same thing, like I'm saying, you know, after April, it's like, wow, this is a great start. I hope he can keep it up, but I'm not necessarily bought into it yet. But now after, you know, 3 months of consistent performance, and I would even say improvements, because like he was being benched at the beginning of the year against lefties. He was hitting lower in the lineup against lefties. And now it's like he's just a regular fixture at the top. So it just kind of gives way more confidence that this is kind of, this is more likely to be the player that he is than, you know, back in April when we saw what he was doing.
So he's he did drop after last week, I guess. He wasn't as productive as the guys in front of him, but he dropped to 18 overall on the Razzball Player Rater. And I think he's the 12th rated hitter. And the guys ahead of him are Judge, Ohtani, Joe Ram, Gunner, Bobby Witt, Soto, Ellie, Ozuna, Harper, William Contreras, and Kettle Marte. Those are the hitters that are ahead of him this season.
Yeah, Ellie hit a home run. Duran hit a home run and stole base today, Tuesday night. So it's probably.
I don't know if this is updated live or not. I'd have to ask Rudy if that's the case or not. If they take direct stats in, or if it does it in the evening, which would be interesting because maybe Duran. I looked last week and I think he was sixth. So a couple of guys had good weeks, and you know this stuff is always fluid. But it's a top 20 player. It's a potential first rounder next year if he keeps this up. I don't think that will happen. I don't think he's going to be a first rounder next year, but he could be a top 3 round pick if he keeps this up and finishes in the top 25, you know, especially a guy with some power, leadoff ability, speed. You know, it's tough to knock it. All right, Dylan, I've named a bunch of players that I thought were interesting. Before we wrap this up, do you have anybody that you wanted to talk about in particular that you felt was and deserve some recognition for what they've done for their fantasy managers this year?
I don't want to give away the farm, like you said, but I do want to put you on the spot. Julio Rodriguez. He has a 080 ISO. He has a 625 OPS. The Mariners dropped him to seventh in the lineup today. How concerned are you about Julio Rodriguez?
You know, I think if you roster Julio, in fantasy, you got to be pretty frightened at this point, right? Like, it's not great, you know. Especially in a redraft league, like you're not going to get the return on investment that you want, of course. But that being said, this one seems to me, and I'd have to dig in more to the numbers, but this one seems to me like a guy where all of a sudden he just gets hot and he goes crazy for a month and a half, you know, like a Justin Upton type of season. If you remember Justin Upton, I don't know if you were a big fantasy guy back in Upton's heyday, but Upton would always stink for one half and then be incredible for another half. Another one I remember was like this Brian Dozier. Brian Dozier had a season where he went crazy in like August and September. And this guy that just qualified in my home league, which is a head-to-head points league, this guy won the league based on Brian Dozier's burner for a month. Like it was like 45 points every week, you know? So if in dynasty leagues, if I have the opportunity to acquire Julio at a cut rate from what I would have acquired him for, even if it's 80 cents on the dollar from what it was in December, I think I'm doing that deal. I think I'm jumping in with both feet and I'm making that move. Now, if you're a competitive team, you would have to have good prospects or some additional peripheral players that are on your bench that are starters for other people, that you just have a log jam of players. Okay, I think you could probably do it. If you're in first place, you're probably not trading for Julio, but like, I have a team in a dynasty league where all my pitching is out until next year, pretty much. And my lineup's pretty good. Someone approached me and was like, hey, I'll move Julio for Cody Bellinger. And, I'm trying to think through my lineup. Francisco Lindor. I think I'm probably going to do that. Like, I'm going to do that. You know, even though both those guys are more productive, that's probably a deal that I would do. If someone put that out there, fine. Here's Lindor. You know, even if I'm bad for the rest of the year, totally fine. But I'm taking in the better player, and I'm pairing that guy up with James Wood in my 30-team outfield. You know, I'm trying to talk this into existence, Rob Sherwood. So, Rob, listen to the podcast. Send me an offer for Julio. Let's get this done. So, I think it depends what the hat's on, right? It's always the redraft and the dynasty hat. The dynasty hat is a great buying opportunity because I don't think this player is done, right? I don't think that Julio Rodriguez peaked at 22 years old, and now that he's 23, he's never going to have, another five war season. I don't think that's going to happen. And I think it could even be this second half. We could even see this guy go absolutely crazy in August and September when we look back and we're like, oh yeah, I remember when, like, he finished as the 51st player in fantasy. Remember when he was outside the top 150? It happens all the time. You know, there's going to be guys who are productive now who are going to be bad in the second half. There's guys who are bad in the first half who are going to be good in the second half. I think it's a great buying opportunity. And if you're an up-and-coming team, maybe in a redraft league, like, you have something to trade for Julio, you got a spot. Maybe you got an extra pitcher, or you have too many closers or something like that. Or someone you think is performing now that someone else wants. I think it's a great buying opportunity. What do you think, Dylan? I know I went in a rant and said the same thing in like 50 different ways, but what do you think with Julio? Are there things that you're concerned about? Because I tend to look at it and say, no, it's just been bad.
I don't have Julio in any dynasty leagues. I have him in the first DC that Brian Slack and I did.
I have him in a DC with Dan Fu, and he's been dragging us down. Everyone else has been good, and he's been dragging us down.
But, as you're talking, I'm looking at his Fangraphs page. I haven't really dug in too much. And so last year when he went 32-37, he hit 275 and had a 126 WRC+. For the rest of season, the Bad X has him projected to hit 275 with a 129 WRC+. He's projected to do, for the rest of season, what he did last year. If you look at his ex-Wobos for his 32-37 season and his 28-25 rookie season, his ex-Wobos were 337 and 345. This year, he's at 329. So he's kind of in the same conversation. 330 versus 335, 345. Like, it's not that much worse. So it's all kind of percolating on the surface. I'm kind of more convinced now after you talked and I looked at these numbers.
Contact is down from 73% to 71.4. That's a rounding error. Like, right? That's a few, like 5, 6, 7 swings. I mean, it's like whatever. Zone contact's down from 83.8 to 81.8%. It's 2% directly. Not all that concerned about that. Both swings down. Zone swing is up. He's swinging at more pitches in the zone. I'd have to look at how pitchers are maybe attacking him and watch some more video. That there might be something there, but I think this guy's going to make an adjustment. He's going to round into form. He's going to have some time off during the All-Star break. I think it's angles because the ground balls are up, line drives are up, fly balls are down. But infield fly balls are down too. So maybe there was some slight change they made. They were maybe like, we want more power out of that or whatever. But, sometimes look at infield fly balls and get concerned. Those 6.1% last year to 5.7 this year is not a huge jump. It's just, it's down this year. And fly balls in general are also down. So kind of interesting. You look at the launch angle 6.8 this year versus 8.5, but it's an overall launch angle. I think you're like me, you'd much rather look at like the ball, like how hard the ball was hit at a particular angle against a particular pitch versus just looking at launch angles. I'd rather maybe have like broken down pull launch angles and some of those things. Launch angles on balls hit over a certain percentage, right? A certain EV. Stuff like that. The barrel rate's down. Yeah, I think it's angles. And when it's angles, Dylan, that tends to tell me that it's probably just a slight swing adjustment, something's bleeding out or, something with his hands maybe and how he's gripping the bat even has changed. There's so many little like idiosyncrasies that could potentially throw things off, but are also very adjustable with the right coaching and, just making a slight change and then you know, I also think, and this is something that I say all the time with the, it's not related, but the aggressive assignments that we see from like the Padres and some of these other teams of pushing these players up to levels where they're not going to be successful. Baseball is a game of momentum, very much more like when you're feeling good and you're hitting the ball, you go up to that plate. I see it with the kids I coach at 9, 10 years old. You go up to the plate with a lot more confidence and you're ready to attack, right? Where I think we see guys that are struggling. The best thing that they can do sometimes is get that walk, right? Just get on base. And then they start to feel a little bit, they're seeing the ball a little bit better. Okay, I'm feeling a little bit better. I think it's just one of those changes. I don't think this guy's done. He's too young and too good to write him off, but it's been a scary first half. You know, for sure. And if you have this guy in a redraft league, you're probably expecting to lose. I mean, I think it's really killed our DC team because we went pretty heavy on pitching early and that's paid off. Our pitching's been great. I think we hit on a lot of guys later in the draft. Even picking up guys like Talkman in a DC is like adding that guy, drafting that guy in like round 46 is like, that's a good move. You know, we had Bray, we have some other guys. But Julio just isn't giving us that power-speed combination that when we calculated everything out during the draft that, all right, we're going to hit this number of home runs. We're going to hit this number of runs and RBIs and stolen bases. And it's like, once you hit this point in the year, it's so hard to make up the difference, right? Like, unless you're – like, you want to get rolling in May and June. Like, I went from being dead last. I thought this team stunk. I was cooked. I'm in eighth. I was in seventh at one point last week. Like – and I feel like, you know, I got James Wood. I was able to pick up Noelvi Marte off of waivers. I'm feeling good about that, right? And, you know, I think that that's the problem with a lot of Julio owners this year in redraft is he's been so bad, you're not going to make up the difference. It's like having Corbin Carroll. I've had the same issue in my Nerf league, which is also NFBC, with Corbin Carroll. Carroll's been so bad that, like, I've looked at his stats at times and been like, should I swap him out for Daniel Schneeman this week? Like, you know, this guy's doing more than Corbin is. What's going on? You know, there's been some busts at the top of the draft. And unfortunately, you got a safe guy like Mookie and then he gets hurt and he's out for a bit, you know? Yeah, I don't know, Dylan. There were some landmines in the first two rounds this year.
Yeah, I know a lot of people are talking about how this has been like the worst first half. Like these are like very, very good seasoned high stakes fantasy players. They're all saying that this is like the worst first half they've ever had in fantasy baseball. It's just, you look at Julio, he has 7 home runs, 29 RBIs. Aaron Judge has 31 home runs and 82 RBIs. Like it's like 60 RBIs. Like if you just add that to your team, like look where you are in the rankings. Like it's just, it's massive.
Heard that in January, the first question out of your mouth would have been, how hurt was Julio? Can he play for a month? Like, you know?
Yeah, no, exactly.
Yeah. You know, and obviously, you know, Judge has been incredible, but I don't have any Aaron Judge because every time I draft him, he gets hurt. Like the only year that I ever had Judge and he was great was his rookie season. And that's because you could get him at the back end of drafts. And then he put up huge numbers, you know, blah, 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 blah. But he's a tough one for me to draft because I feel like I do try to avoid the players that are injury played, even if I really like them as a player, you know. If I was building a team, I'd want Aaron Judge. I'm playing MLB The Show with my son. I want to hit with Aaron Judge, you know. But in fantasy, it's like, what if I only get 100 games? Right. Yep. And then you're like, oh, and then maybe he'll come back. And then, you know, he's not really hitting and, you know, that whole thing. It's one of the same reasons I avoid Tyler Glasnow is I'm just always kind of waiting for the next shoe to drop Glasnow's health. And maybe that's wrong, but I feel like more often than not, if you are conservative with injury plagued players, it's usually a good choice, you know? So
totally agree.
There you go. This year just doesn't make any sense. There's nothing you can do. But Dylan, we are 55 minutes. Let's wrap this sucker up, get it out to the people. As always, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for subscribing. We got a lot of good content coming out over the next couple of weeks over on Baseball America. So stay tuned.
Cheers.
AI might be the most important innovation ever. It's storming every industry, with literally billions being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs the right data and a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? Time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, and application development, with AI embedded across it all. And Oracle Sovereign Cloud helps you address your requirements for location, access, and data residency. OCI provides blazing fast speeds for AI's demanding workloads. And in the cloud, when you pay by the minute, speed matters. And of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. If you want OCI to help you do more and spend less, like Uber, the Premier League, and Oracle Red Bull Racing, take a free test drive at oracle.com/bandwidth. That's oracle.com/bandwidth. oracle.com/bandwidth.